Oh, okay. Yeah, sure.
There it is.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, as I was saying, I have a few questions about governance. And school boards are elected officials, and they direct the way the school board operates. And I guess we've talked about some of the importance of training and things like that has been mentioned. Is that a new type of training, I guess? And how has the practices in terms of governance changed in this? Because I guess the trustees, as the elected representatives, are the watch, are the people who watch this for taxpayers in one sense. And so I'm just wondering, has this caused the board to have a renewed look at the way governance is done at the board and the availability of information to the Board of Trustees and their involvement in decision making?
Cronway.
Perfect. Has board governance, the job, I'm not saying this, the job hasn't changed as a trustee from before to now. Obviously, the complexities and the size of the district adds a whole new layer or two on top of what trustees did before. Through the financial accountability, the program accountability, the risks that have identified, our governance piece comes through policy development and follow-up and accountability to those policies. And I guess our governance structure has changed since this came in, because we alluded to it earlier on, our finance, our risk committee, our internal audit committee, that actually, you know, those processes that we have different lines of business. We have our CEO who makes the direct decisions of the day. Now, not only us questioning, but the audit component, internal audit component, is also looking at. The risk assessment component is also looking at the resource. So in terms of the governance structure, the governance, our responsibilities have changed because of this, because now we're getting direct reports to the board on these issues. That's a clear change from what would have happened before. There'd only be single lines of communication coming up. So our governance, our accountability, and our governance structures have definitely improved. The training, PD, for the last 3 years in our district, it had been canceled for a while, professional development for individual trustees, but we do have the resources to go away, and individuals are able to choose what they want to do. And some of the trustees, based on what's taken place within the financial review process, has prioritized the need for a greater understanding about the financial accountability and more so about some of the subtle system controls you can put in place in order to do the job more effectively.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In terms of and I had about a minute and a half left. In terms of the rural urban differences and things like that, that has been mentioned as a constraint in terms of the way things are approved. And I represent a rural district. I've grew up in a small community and visit many small communities in my district and elsewhere in the province. And I'm not sure. You mentioned Nain as an example of a rural isolated school. I'm not sure what kind of internet connection they have. But my experience is most schools in the province have pretty good internet connections. So I'm not sure. How, in terms of, I understand in terms of the number of bidders and things like that, but most of the problems outlined in this report were related to things, other things that weren't related to small isolated schools. And I would think that the standards in most cases should be similar where possible. And I'd like to explore a little bit in terms of exactly how, the cultural differences between the previous boards, the rural urban sort of split. Why such? What are you saying, that the accountability measures should be less stringent because of those things, or what's the case to be made there? Given that my experience, most schools have pretty good internet access.
Okay, Gronway.
On the internet, I beg to differ. There's clearly different classes of internet capacity in this province on the coast of Labrador. It's dial-up or DSL, where in most of the other places we're on fiber op now. And all the software packages that are running in the schools are bandwidth hogs most of the time. And so it does shut down. So it makes it difficult for some of the logins. That's a statement of fact. What I was saying is it's not, and I alluded to it earlier in a comment about policy development. It's not that there's less accountability, but we have to make sure when we make a policy and the accountability framework works in all the communities that we're actually participating in. For example, if you standard policy for getting quotes on things is you want three quotes and then you make a decision and then you go through the proper process. In certain places, it's not you can't get three quotes. So what do you do in that location that it has to be in the policy to give the same accountability to the process as it would be for three quotes in a larger center? So we have to make sure that if we're making, in some of the smaller communities where you can't do this, then you have to make sure the policy is reflective and still holds them accountable so that some of those questionable decisions aren't being made. It's not a case of not holding them accountable. It's just making sure that the policy is robust enough that it does understand the circumstances in different locations.
Mm-hmm. And allows for exceptions where they're warranted.
Or an exception is you've still got to move forward and you've still got to acquire something.
Yeah.
And if on a Friday night or Friday evening, the windows are beat out in a school or something like that, and you have to do. Those emergency process, we have them in place, but yeah. We have to make sure they're still accountable. And that's what the reflection was when we were doing. Same in all our policy sectors. When we develop policy in the school district, obviously our internal crew go at generating the initial brand of the politics of the policy, but then it's gone out to the regional components to make sure that the policy actually can work and make sense in all regions. It's not a case of making it an exception in a region. It's making sure that the policy can fit with the same amount of accountability.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll have a chance to ask some other questions later on, but I think my time is up.
Okay. No problem, Mr. Reed. Thank you. Ms. Parsons, you have any more questions?
No, I'm good on this.
On this part of it? Okay. Yeah. Mr. Bragg?
All right. I think we're pretty well agreed on the questions each. And, I don't know where to start almost now because I got four or five and I got to clue it down to one. But I think I'm going to make it two into one all the same. Like you, last time you said there's a challenge with the internet and the availability, I guess, to do reporting and everybody stay up to key. But so we had four districts previously to amalgamation, right? One is all we've identified. There's any issues, there's been any wrongdoing, which was the Avalon Eastern District. And assuming that you guys have gone back and checked out the other districts, just a few spot checks to say, okay, yeah, well, that all worked great. So if their policies were so good, say, well, use Central, Western, or Labrador to deal with theirs, why wouldn't that be the policies we would have quickly got into rather than trying to work with four different ones when we had such a big issue that went on that brought the Auditor General in?
So, Tony Stark. So with respect to none of the previous predecessor boards would have had, for example, to my knowledge, my understanding, something like a risk management process, specifically a financial or fraud risk management process. None of the predecessor districts would have had that. I do not believe any of the predecessor districts would have had an audit committee of the board where the auditors reported directly. So those are things that needed to take place pan-district. And the policies, like conflict of interest, there may have been elements of that policy in other regions, but we're one district now, so we need a provincial policy. So those policies apply evenly throughout every quarter. And I'll ask Terry, I don't know if you have anything to add to that, Terry, with respect to the finances, in terms of the processes we do for spot checks, that kind of thing.
Thank you, Tony. No, I don't have anything specific to add other than the fact that when the amalgamation happened, and you're talking about the four previous boards all were operating on four different financial systems. So the processes that would have been in other areas weren't necessarily transferable to when they formed one. And the system that was chosen, and I guess due to expeditedness, if I can use that word, because they only had a couple of months to amalgamate, they chose SDS because that was the one that was being used in the larger centre. So in order to bring it all together and into the processes, as Mr. Stack said, not all the regions had all policies or procedures written either, and it just had to, it came into the one, and then it's been worked on ever since in terms of trying to make sure if we can get district-wide policies and procedures. And obviously, we know where we ended up and what we're trying to do go forward.
Okay. Can I follow up one, yes, one final question? Just looking for a yes or no answer. So is the board combined, like the English and French two district school boards, is it too big for you guys to manage the English one in being one board, say, from Nain to St. John's?
Well, I can start, and certainly our chair. As a CO, we have... it's Newfoundland and Labrador English School District. One of the advantages of a large district is synergies and continuity of effort, cohesion of effort around improving educational outcomes. And we've been able to leverage as well expertise in various capacities, be that programs expertise or student transportation or the technical skills of individuals throughout the district on a provincial scope. So there's advantages, there's synergies that come from being a provincial board. I think there's advantages as well for the department in terms of the promulgation of policies, the interaction. Those are positives. But I will acknowledge that it is, essentially in 2012 there were four, and then at the end of August of that year, September 1, there was one. There was very little transition time. And we started with essentially no policies, just the predecessor board policies. And over time, even continuing to this day, there's an effort to collate those, to dispense with the ones that are no longer required, develop them provincial in scope, and it's still an ongoing process. Obviously, the key ones like student assessment and evaluation were tackled right away, but it took time. I think we're at a point right now where most of the policies that are essential to our operation are there, but there's still work to do. So even after 5 years, there's still a coming together of policies. And it is a big district. And one of the things that we're sensitive to is ensuring that our support for the students in Rigolet or Harbor Breton or Marystown or St. John's that we have a cohesive response to student learning, and that we're able to provide the services throughout the province. Leveraging technology has also helped with that. That's a long-winded answer, but Cronway?
I'd probably, obviously the board size is huge, and everyone understands it in comparison to other provinces and stuff. Those 67,000 students is a large one spread all over the 254 schools with the employees that go along. It is, as Tony has alluded to, there are some synergies. I'll give you a practical one from here. It's like teachers going to Labrador to go to school and teach are more likely to do it now because they have the flexibility of taking that experience and transferring it right across the province. So there are certain pieces. To answer the question from a personal point of view, because I can't answer for all the, some would suggest that it's a rather large and that differences of the different regions are clearly different. But what I'd say to you is this, that the school district has been around for 5 years now. And when you look at what's happened within those 5 years in the classroom with the safety and busing and all those other aspects, all the issues, the large issues have come up, have been dealt with in a fairly satisfactory manner. And the system has been able to continue on. So is the school board, is the school district huge? Yes, it is. And is it frustrating at times? Yes. But the values and the ability to do have been proven that it does work the way it is. The governance side of this, we have to work on, and it's going to take time. And we're certainly not stagnant. We're moving forward, as you can see, through the dialogue today. The committees are being struck. The policies are being made. And... it was asked earlier on. Because of these reports, because of the reflection on financial accountability, we're now picking up things right across the district that lead to normal follow-up, you know, questions about practice and stuff like that, which would not have been done before these governance processes and accountability processes were put in place. So I think that is a litmus test of, yes, the thing is, there's still growing pains, it's still big, but I think it is starting to work.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bragg. Pass over, Mr. Pitt. Mr. Patton is about to speak. Okay.
There we go. I'd like to follow up. We keep talking, I guess, about the progress that the district has made, and which is all good, and policies and committees being formed is a very important aspect to dealing with a very serious issue, and I think this is a very serious issue. But they're not the resolution. I guess they're not, you know, their committees and policies are fine. It's policies in effect and policies being implemented and results coming from these policies are probably the most important thing. So I guess it sounds nice to say we have committees and policies, but we're going back 6-7 years. I mean, the AG came in 2016. So this is not new, as you stated across the way. By several of you officials over there, that this is not new, it was no surprise, and you were aware of a lot of this stuff. So we're 3 years in, pushing 3 years in, and we're still dealing with committees and policies, which is good, but it's still not where we need to be, I think. But I'm looking at the board, the database or new electronic system for monitoring or for the financial operations. You look at, you know, $2 million for year one, $2 million for year two, and $1.3 million every year after for staffing alone just to protect against fraud. And all the while, there's no tangible answers as to what is being, like what went wrong, who's responsible. I mean, from my end of it, I don't know if I can speak for myself, but I mean, you know, to me, this appears to be somewhat of a blank check. And I've asked this question earlier in this morning when I started off, and I'll ask it again. There's no explanations across the way that's after telling me that you know concretely what went wrong. I would never let this happen again, because I'll say it again, if you don't know where your problem originated, you can't have a solution to it. If you don't know the problem, you can't have a solution. To say this shouldn't ever happen, we had fraudulent activities, people were charged, that's good. And I mean, you got to have committees and policies in place. But to be coming forward, looking for in excess of, in 3 years, you're going to be over $5.3 million, and that'll be built down and on. And there's no clear explanation other than some words and comforting thoughts that tells us that you even know what went wrong. And I don't really know what's in place now. I mean, we still get the same system in place. The same people are there. A lot of the same people are there. Same system. There's nothing new other than the fact there's going to be more oversight and people are watching closely. There's nothing new implemented. There's something like this, wouldn't you scrap it down and build it back up? There appears to be still ripe for fraud, I guess. And to my dear Bragg, my colleague's question was the other areas, when you amalgamate it, is what's happening out there? You know, like, it's fine to say, but or has the AG been asked to go in and look at those too? We don't know. We don't, like, we're still operating on our old system until we get this new, supposedly new policy and system in place, just more checks and balances in this old system. But to Mr. Stack's point, we're still operating on the old system until we get a new system in place. And we've got more oversight and there's a more of a manual process, and that's good. But I'm troubled by, you know, just give us the money and we'll fix it and we get all the solutions. And I'm, as a member of this committee, I don't feel comfortable. I mean, I can speak for myself. I don't feel comfortable. That's where we're to. So whoever's free, feel free to remark. Or that's my main comment to sum it up, I guess.
I'm not sure if there's a question in there, but I think we've spoken to most of those points throughout. But I can reiterate again that we acknowledge that the system, the financial system we have, is antiquated. The actual technology behind that drives the financial system. So we do realize that there is still a vulnerability there. We're open and transparent about that. We need a new system. The one we've asked for specifically is something called Cayenta. It's something that we floated, have been floating to the department now for a couple of years. And there may be better systems out there. This consultant that's been hired may actually be able to recommend some things that, as long as it doesn't break our system and works with our schools, some of the government systems that are in place in the core of government may be applied. But we absolutely acknowledge we need that. In the interim, what we have to rely on is manual processes and people diligently providing the oversight to the degree that it's possible. But if you're looking for a guarantee that we're not still vulnerable to fraud, I can't give it to you, sir. We've stated what our requirement, we've delineated what we think we need. Government have hired a consultant to meet us halfway and discuss where we need to go, and I think that's our best effort. We will remain resolute in rooting out any fraud that we detect, and when we're aware of it, as we have done, we will employ HR processes appropriately, using due process to deal with those individuals if they occur. We will employ our policies as rigidly as we can, and the board oversight, which the Auditor General recommended, we've hoisted in fully, and I think that the internal audit process that we'll employ, interfacing with the board and reporting directly to the board, will pay dividends, and it'll meet the recommendations of the Auditor General. I'm looking at the recommendations in the Auditor General's report, and they are all achievable. However, to be fully implemented in those recommendations, we require a better system. And that system comes with a cost. I'll leave it there.
Yeah, just one quick follow-up to that, too. So I guess the question is, why can't we partner or piggyback, I guess, want of a better word, off the provincial system, which seems to be working quite well? I mean, it's the province has a...
I think that's
40,000 employees, so them.
And that is part of the process. However, remembering that schools is a different animal than core government business. And ultimately, we got to, whatever we develop in tandem with government, whatever the consultant comes back with, has to work for schools. That's why we're here. So it has to work from a programming perspective. From a procurement progress perspective for those schools. And if government systems can be leveraged to support the district, then we're all for it. Our only caveat is it's got to work for schools.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Patton. Move on to Mr. Kane.
I just want to go a little bit on with this one as well, because you're asking for $2 million, $1.5 million to maintain it afterwards. So the cost is very alarming to me when you look at is this the amount of money it's going to take to lease the program or to employ people? Is if you look at $1.5 million, and if you have a salary on average of $70,000, you're looking at 21 people to prevent fraud.
There's some question. This will come out probably in the consultant's activity as well. But even employing government systems, our initial look at it, given our dispersed footprint in this province, might actually require more human resources than we're asking for in this, our own proposal. It might. It might actually be more costly at the end of the day. We don't know yet. I'll ask my chief financial officer to provide more granularity or add anything there.
Sure. That Terry speaking. Just first on the system. Let's pretend for a second we're not talking about fraud. In a normal operation, every so many years you upgrade your system anyway because it outlives itself. And this system, we have outlived it. The supplier has given us notice over 2 years ago that it is done. It is basically sunset, and we need to move to a different system. Right? So that's part of upgrades and natural anyway. For us, the added is the system left us vulnerable anyway. It didn't have the control. So the system replacement itself, just on the cost, you know, we estimated, and we've done a lot of work with the supplier, To acquire the system itself is about $600,000 to have it fully implemented, okay? And then we'll pay an annual software support, no different than if you're on Oracle or if you're on PeopleSoft or no matter what you're on, you have to pay an annual support fee, which for us, you know, we've got some commitments. It won't be any different than what we're paying on our system today for at least 5 years. So the additional cost that you talk about, I just want to go back for a second in terms of resources. And your colleague down at the end asked about, is it too big to operate? I just want to put in perspective, you know, what Tony and Granway have been reiterating, that we're in the education system. We're trying to protect the classroom. Over the last 5 years of GRI initiatives and attrition management initiatives, all of our reductions, we take in the office because we try to protect the front line. And I can assure you, we have taken out like north of 20 and 30 bodies in our administrative teams in the district. So we are now 5 years in after amalgamation, and we call her, and what I say anyway, we get beyond amalgamation now, we're a mature district. Some of these costs are just to right size as to now what we know that we need in order to operate. And it's not just to prevent fraud, it's to operate efficiently. We know we do $80,000 to $90,000 thousand invoices a year. We know we can't sustain that with six AP people. It is way too much if we wanted to process properly. Right? We need some more oversight with that, so we need to add the bodies in order to operate efficiently. And if we want centralized purchasing and take purchasing away from the facilities team, it means more people. So not only to
operate... just to get back, do you say you have 6 to 8 people currently working on this?
Six to seven AP folks right now processing 80 to 90 to 100,000 invoices a year. We process a lot, and you know, and the same in our procurement. Like we obviously have requisitions and POs that we need to process in order to match those invoices.
Certainly.
And facilities, which is the specific area that was reviewed for 5 years, they do greater than 50% of all our POs. Like that's the nature of that particular operation in the district. There's a lot of activity with it. So. While it looks like, you know, it starts out high, with any implementation, and I sat through a meeting last week or week before, even if we get to a point we can utilize some of the government's core systems, we will need to have temporary staff for 12 to 18 months to do the implementation. That is with any implementation of a new system. You need people there on the ground in order to help with the implementation because you can't take your people that are trying to run the business every day in order to do it. So there is a little blip, and then there is people that are needed after in order to structure to be able to maintain it and do it properly go forward.
Certainly, that's what I'm looking. That's what raised the red flag. Is you're asking for money, but if you're going to put it into a central processing where you make things more efficient, then it would actually make sense. And
correct.
This is why I'm looking for justification for the money being spent.
Yep.
That's all the questions I have.
Sure.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. King. Ms. Rogers.
Yeah, I'm sitting here and just getting more and more despondent. Really, what we're talking about is people are ripping off the system. How do we stop them from ripping it off? So we can do any kind of, a centralized system, but that's not the core of the problem here. It's not the core of the problem. And the core of the problem is why are our own staff who are working for the people of Newfoundland and Labrador, is it a small handful of staff, ripping off the people of Newfoundland and Labrador, ripping off our education system? And what needs to be done to stop that? And I think to talk about a brand new system, yes, probably, you know, it's outdated and we need to improve that. But that's not going to stop the problem that we have. It may stop false invoices or et cetera, but we also saw the situation where their people had said that they were at work when they weren't. So what is, in God's name, is happening that there seems to be, or maybe you can put it in perspective for us, How much money do we think has been lost in fraud? How much time do we think we have lost? How many people have been involved in fraudulent activities, whether it's stealing paper clips or having their house resided or getting tires for their vehicles? Like, what, in your estimation, what is the magnitude of the problem? And it's not going to be solved simply by a new way to process invoices and purchase orders. What in God's name is happening that people are ripping off our system?
I would agree with that completely. You know, it is, I can tell you, you know, I spent my life, better part of my life, in education. And the vast majority of our employees, from our teachers to our secretaries to our facilities workers, custodials, you name it, the folks that work in the finance and student transportation, are honorable Newfoundland Labradorians who are doing their very best day in, day out, sung and unsung, for the children of this province. But there are some who took advantage of some holes in our system that we're now plugging. And, you know, when we first uncovered it, I was sickened, even more sickened when I read the Auditor General's report. And it is disturbing, no question, because, you know, if there's ever an enterprise where we husband our resources and save, watch every penny, it's within the education system. And it's all tried to be, we try to funnel it directly to the classroom, to where the needs are. And to have that somehow stomped on, abused, for people to have personal gain from that, is disgusting. So, you know, I definitely share in the sentiment. But I don't think it reflects on the whole of the organization. I think it's a few individuals. And I believe that we have dealt with them, unless there's new evidence that comes to light. And when we're aware of the issue, we dealt with them expeditiously and in a forthright and fair manner. And some of that may yet unfold in our judiciary as well. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I certainly share in the sentiment.
Well, it doesn't, because it seems that this has been going on for a long time, even if it's just a few people. So, yes.
Granway, to you.
Granway. Thank you. One thing about this approach, this action plan, we've got 17 trustees, elected trustees from across the province that have dedicated a lot of time to researching and taking the interest and the importance of this report to heart and doing a lot of stuff on our own time. This is not just something that's dropped out of the sky and we want this, this, and this. The solution to our problem is not singular. Mm-hmm. It's not singular. It's a multifaceted approach. And no one element of it is going to fix the issue. It's not going to fix the issue. All right, we accept that, so that's why we have a multifaceted approach. We recognize also, too, that as everyone in this room knows, fraud happens. It happens in all the greatest places in this country. Part of the measure of an organization is how we deal with it once we know it. Mm-hmm. And we're, from our point of view, from my point of view, this organization has been dealing with the issues, and we continue to deal with issues of questionable nature with individuals within our 8,000 employees. Now, going back to the ask to government and the peace, we recognize, because we deal with it every day, that the complexity of this board and the organization of this board takes a lot of effort and work to get it done. The AG has spent 2 years in our offices going through and doing it, and it has given us extra credibility and credential to really professionalize and improve our system. And that's why we're doing what we're doing. The governance side, the structures of the committee, it's not just a committee. It's people volunteering that are looking at issues that are raised and brought to the board to deal with. It's not just another, and I'm serious, it's not just another committee. If I was sitting here today, and sometimes I get this feeling that we've done nothing since this report has come in, I wouldn't be sitting here. Guess what my paycheck is? It's Zippo. right? I get nothing for this. And when you sit and you dedicate your soul to something and you can see improvements and stuff like that, it tends to get you a little fired up when, and I understand the role of asking the tough questions, and they should be asked. But you also have to understand, from our point of view, we are implementing clear processes that everyone in this room would do if they were in the same seat to try and make sure that the honest people in our system don't go off track. There will be dishonest people, and we will be dealing with them, and we'll continue to deal with them. But in order for us to be the best we possibly can with this, we've identified some basic things that are required to make sure this mammoth organization does move forward in a positive way. And, you know, it's going to be tough. This district is tough. Every youngster goes to school tomorrow. And it's got to happen. And so we have to make that whole system jig together like a jigsaw puzzle. And the software will make, you know, that will ease up some of our staff time in order to do some of the other stuff that you are critically thinking that we need to do. And we agree to it. So I didn't mean to get wound up about it, but I can assure you, from the chair's point of view and the focus on this and the expression of our board and the actions that we've taken since this has come down and since the activities took place, we are definitely moving this organization forward. And if that impression wasn't, the 17 volunteers that sit around this table have put a hell of a lot of effort into making this happen. And have we done it to the best of the world class? I'd say we've done a pretty good job. Can we do better? We can, and that's a good thing. Because if you think you got to figure it out, you don't.
Okay, so I'm going to suggest that you blow your own horn, and I look forward to seeing a report of what you have done, because that will hopefully solidify that in the minds of everyone, because there are people out there saying, what have they done? And, you know, it's all obfuscation. Let's put that to rest with what has actually concretely been done. You said, somebody earlier said, I think, Tony, it was you, our plan was submitted to government and government has responded. What was their response? And what specifically was that plan?
So the government response, you know, to formally answer, we had an initial response on November 13th to the chair, indicating that they received our action plan and the associated request. As a result of the recent Auditor General's report, and that they'll review the action plan and the associated request, and it'll be part of the budget 2019 process. That was one letter. Yep. The other correspondence was related to the fact that they were engaging and have engaged, or sorry, have put out an RFP for a consultant to meet with us and see if government's current system has the capacity to address a number of the issues identified in our request, such as the centralized purchasing, the quality controls for accounts payable, inventory control, and asset management. So that response was received on November 29th. So the next step, we're going to continue with our own slice of this, which is the development, continued emphasis on the first two recommended, or the first couple of bullets in the Auditor General's recommendation around code of ethics and code of conduct and policies and procedures. We'll continue on that, and we'll engage with this consultant with respect to the systems and processes and automated systems that will that might be leveraged from the government side going forward. So that's been the formal response to government.
Okay, and the RFP that government's putting out for a consultant. Is that different? Have you hired a different consultant yourselves?
No.
So there's this only one consultant?
One consultant that the Department of Education is engaging.
Okay.
And then they will interface with us to determine going forward.
So there's not a separate consultant. And I just have two more short questions.
Okay, go ahead.
Also, you talked about, where is it? The cultural shift that we have invested in. That was you, Mr. Price. Can you tell me a little bit more about that cultural shift and what that means?
Okay, Gromley. Tony is a good advocate on this because he recognizes him being in the trenches every day. He understands the cultural nature of the piece and he's advocated. But the cultural shift that I talk about is similar to him,
but it's in an environment previous to some of the investigations that have been ongoing. Our organization was totally and utterly focused on students, okay? And it should be. That's what their priority should be. But also within that focus, there has to be a broader range focus that includes financial accountability, ethics, doing the right thing, doing it in the right way, and those pieces. So what we're working at, and we're doing through continual upgrading, continual contact with our people, our employees, our teachers, or whatever, through a PD, is we're focusing on these other issues so that they realize and they understand. So now when they're making choices, an example I think I used earlier on was the school secretaries in the schools and stuff like that. Their world is a crazy world. It always is a crazy world because they're dealing with the kids that are coming in the office all day. But they have an onerous responsibility on the financial accounting and making sure the data and all that kind of stuff is up to date. Sometimes those individuals come from different backgrounds with different skill sets, and sometimes it's easy to overlook that they need the assistance that we're doing. So our sort of corporate culture is looking at making sure that we give the honest people that are out there the tools to be able to do the jobs that, you know, that it's obvious that we haven't been supporting in the right kinds of way in the previous context. So that cultural shift, to me, is what I'm talking about. Prior to before, it was a single focus. Now the broad, responsible mandate of the whole board is where the corporate culture is changing and is improving. And we see it. We see it because some issues now that would never come up before are now coming up. People are asking questions about things that they would never have asked before. How do we do this? How does the school do a better accountability in this framework? So that's the cultural shift that we're working at and moving. And that's one component. The body count to have, you know, the resources to be able to do your job, the equipment to support the job, right? And sometimes the equipment works better in different locations than others, and we have to accept that. But we have to be cognizant of it. So that's the corporate shift that we're talking about, that I'm talking about when we say that we have to make sure that we're reflecting.
And one of the realities is that we have fewer schools and smaller enrollments, that in fact our school system is not expanding, but rather, I believe, shrinking, and how do we adapt to that as well? So I look forward to getting the reports of the work that's been done to date. And I sure hope you can get this right. I sure hope you can. It's so important, and I hope that you're able to find a system that doesn't paralyze any work or strangle any work, and that makes it not just more efficient, but also more satisfying for the people who are working in the system and all the great people who are working in our education system, whether it be with the staff there at the English District School Board or the English District Board, and also there have been some concerns raised to me about the board and the trustees, and making sure that trustees are really have the opportunity to be involved, that this is not an executive-run board, but that, in fact, the trustees have authority, that they have the skills they need and the resources they need to really be able to fully participate in the roles that they have been asked to do, that they have been elected to do. I would hope that part of that cultural shift is also to ensure that that can happen, and that they are fully aware of what's going on and be part of the architects of moving forward.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers. I'm going to go to Mr. Reed.
Thank you. I think part of public accounts is that we examine how taxpayers' money is spent, and we look at that the proper procedures are in place for the way money has been spent. And I think this hearing for me sort of highlights the importance of doing that. And I still have some questions and concerns after this hearing, though. And I listened to some of the responses to some of the questions. And one thing sort of caught my attention was when I think it was the member for Bonavista asked about the nature and scope of the problem. And the response was that you know, there are a few people, and there's no system that can be put in place that would prevent all fraud. And then there was the statement that we think that the vast majority of the employees in the system are honest and trustworthy. And I hope that's the case, too, and I believe that it is the case. But none of us here have any evidence that that's the case because of the lack of documentation of what's happened. And that's not fair to us. It's not fair to taxpayers. It's not fair to the people who work with the school board, really. And I don't know if the seriousness of this issue is really taking hold here yet in some of the responses that I've had. So that's one issue that I wanted to put on the table. The other issue is related to this financial system. And you mentioned Terry Hall, when you spoke, that these systems sort of have a time that they're useful, and then so the sort of, I guess, these issues started to be highlighted by your internal auditors about 4 years ago or so, right? So wouldn't you plan, if you know you're going to have to replace an asset, you have a fair period of time to work that into your budgeting process. Why do you have to make a special request to put that system in the place? Shouldn't have you been planning for that long ago? And I'm going to put another question there just to put them all on the table and you can look at. And I think the other question is, now that we are where we are, how do we restore confidence in the school board? How do we restore confidence that money is being spent in a in an appropriate fashion, that the documentations have been done? And the last thing I want to ask is, in the last couple of years, have there been any complaints from bidders about problems with the process? So it's a number of questions there.
Sure. Tony, you want me to answer the first one on the system? Or? Sure. Okay, so I'll answer your first one on the system itself.
Yeah.
We did acknowledge over 2 years ago, actually, and I'm sure you appreciate we're funded by the department from the government. So we can't just say, okay, we want to spend X on upgrading a system. We have to go look for the approval and the funding. So over 2 years ago, we did acknowledge, to be honest, that we first highlighted we need a new system. And we done the research, and because we were talking with our current supplier, and they said, as I said, it was manufactured MD. Basically, they weren't doing anything with it, and we needed to move. And, you know, given the timing, I guess, and the economy and where the province was going through, there was no, funding, no appetite at that time to provide the money in order to do the upgrade. So that's why we went through the AG for the last couple of years, and the report finally came out, and we decided that, look, our current system, I'll use the word, is an enabler. So I don't say our current system caused it. Our current system is an enabler because it doesn't have the preventative controls in it that will stop someone from initiating, approving, and receiving all in one. So it's an enabler. So if someone had a propensity to want to do something, our system didn't stop it, I guess is my point. So we need a system that enables us to have better system control so we're not so dependent upon the individual sat in a desk that can't go through 80,000 invoices or anything like that. And because we got some of our purchasing control out into some of the teams, we can't control that all the time. So we did, just to answer your question, We have approached this over more than 2 years ago, and it's been on the table, and we're just now, again, after the AG's report, putting it back on the table, that it is one of the issues that unless we are able to get a system with better controls, we are going to be more and more and more dependent upon the people resources that we have, and we're going to need even more if we need to try and do this manually. Okay.
Tony? With respect to how do you restore confidence, I think the Auditor General has given us a recipe for success here. These recommendations are achievable, and we've already taken great steps, even before the Auditor General's report came out, in anticipation of some of these recommendations. But now that we actually have them, then it's a responsibility. I view, and I know my colleagues here view, as well as my governing Board of Trustees, safeguarding the public purse is a sacred responsibility, particularly when we're talking about funding that is towards the development of our, I'll use the term, often overused but very apt, our precious human resource, which is our youth of our province. So that is a sacred trust. The blueprint has been provided by the Auditor General, and I'll reiterate, we are seized with ensuring that these recommendations are carried out, and we're well down that path. Part of the solution, however, is the acquisition of a modernization of resources. And that process is underway as well.
You good, Mr. Reed? Ms. Parsons?
I have nothing further on this.
Okay, if there's any other point now you want to bring up, it's an opportunity before we go back again while you're there. Any other education issue? Are you good?
Are we opening up?
Yeah, it can be. Yeah. I'm given the indulgence here of the staff while we have you. If there's a particular question somebody has relevant to while you're here, you're good for that? Well, this wasn't the intent. Now, there still may be other questions, but well, we've already bypassed Ms. Parsons once in case there's something you may want to get some clarification on. I'll give you that leeway.
I guess, can we go and talk about, say, busing topics? I mean, as you know, the 1.6 busing has been a contentious topic, as well as courtesy seating. And of course, it's apparently it's been a long time topic and something that's been implemented for quite some years. And us as elected officials on all sides of the House, there's concerns brought, of course, by constituents regarding the 1.6, the distance, as well as the courtesy seating. I guess, what can we say to improve this? I mean, you know, what would be or need to happen? I mean, what are the chances that we can, you know, I guess improve safety? Because those are the sorts of concerns that parents bring forward. For example, in the district I represent, Harbor Grace, Portagrave, in Bay Roberts, and I'll use the Coley's Point Primary School as an example. That school is located off of the main highway, which is a four-lane highway. And in those areas, you know, we currently don't have any sidewalk infrastructure or even signage, you know, with crosswalks or crossing guards for that matter. So, I mean, you know, parents have a genuine concern for that, and rightfully so, especially in an inclement weather during the winter months, you know, how hard it is. Some of these children who don't have the means to get to school or parents to have the means to bring their children, you know, to this school. I mean, what do you say to that? I mean, because when concerns come to my office, I've spoken with my colleagues, the education minister and whatnot, and I mean, it's put back there that it's the Eastern School District, or rather the, you know, the NL English School District that oversees this policy or whatnot. So what can you say about that? How can we improve this? I mean, will it be, I guess, made away with at some point?
So I guess, you know, it depends on what you mean and define by improve it, I suppose. Right now, the 1.6 kilometer, and I'm not being a spokesman for the department, because ultimately the 1.6 is a Department of Education policy. It's a government policy. And we are funded with that 1.6 model in mind. And what's happened over time with the attrition of our student population in places, as contracts are renewed, or if it's board-owned busing, we can do that on an annual basis, you look for efficiencies. So efficiencies may mean one of the consequences of that, where before there might have been two buses and there was excess capacity for courtesy seating, if you become more efficient with your route planning, then now you're down to one bus, which less courtesy seats. The courtesy seats is also part of a government policy and our own policy, which provides seats to students who are not eligible for busing. We are the implementers of government policy. Now, this year, one sector of the province where we were doing the review based on new contracts and efficiencies, and we were asked to look at a stop within the 1.6. And that was implemented in about, 44 routes. We run 1,100 routes, and we have a very small busing staff who need to reconnoiter these stops, make recommendations. It sounds simple, but it's an involved process to do safely, to implement new stops where there had never been stops before, sanctioned stops. There might have been informal stops that Joe, the bus driver, whoever, might have just done on an informal basis. But to have a properly assigned stop takes a bit of staff effort and research. So that's in the pilot phase to see how this stop within the 1.6 works. From a national perspective, the 1.6 is, with the exception of, I think it's primary students in Prince Edward Island, who it's 1 kilometer. But other than that, most of the busing distances or the eligible zones are much larger than 1.6. I was just recently reading an article out of Durham where, due to some efficiency planning in bell times, school bell times, they were able to bring the distance down from 4 kilometers to 3.2, which is still twice as long as our eligibility zone. So in terms of best in class, the busing distances are best in class in this country. Now, I know that does nothing to alleviate the concerns and fears of parents that may be worried about their children traversing particular routes. But we are operating within the parameters of the provincial policy, and we're funded in that manner. And the only other, I guess, editorial comment I would make, obviously, as an educator, we're always looking from a resource perspective. And a bus, to buy a bus is over $100,000. To maintain a busing contract, every bus on the road, whether it be contracted or our own bus services, is somewhere in the range of, $65,000, $100,000 when you take everything into account. And that's almost what a teacher costs. From an educator's lens, I'd rather invest in resources for the schools in terms of human resources, teachers, student assistants. The addition of extra buses, none of that is going to improve math scores. And if you're looking at the total education pie, that's where I think, in terms of priority, now in a perfect world, you'd have everybody bused and excess resources to get to the desired outcome in terms of teacher allocation, student assistance, but we have to make decisions. So I guess in summary, we are compliant with provincial regulations, and we are funded in that manner, and we have offered some flexibility with respect to courtesy seating, and there's a bit of a pilot undergoing it right now for a stop within the 1.6. But other than that, we're not terribly flexible to do much more.
But having said that, though, going back to the safety with regards to where you would choose to put resources, I mean, children's safety, I mean, you can't put a price on that. And again, I want to compare, a rural district. For example, in the district I represent, Harbor Grace, Port-au-Grave, about an hour outside of St. John's, it's not comparable to the infrastructure that we see in the metro region. Like the sidewalks, again, they're non-existent in parts of my district. Pretty much all of my district. And I could say probably the same for a lot of my colleagues who represent districts around the province. And again, I mean, I was invited to come out with a parent and walk the distance and to drive the distance that this child now has to walk. I mean, apparently it's been in place for quite some time, but it wasn't implemented in my district until just recently. Now, I don't know how that happened or why it wasn't implemented, apparently, when it was implemented in, you know, other places throughout the province. But again, and I'm being the voice of the parents, the people, the constituents I'm representing, and there's the genuine concerns that they bring to me. Is, you know, the safety, and rightfully so. I mean, if a child, what's the point in, you know, an extra, you know, any kind of resource that you say in a classroom, if that child's safety is jeopardized, even getting to school in the first place. So, I mean, and given the responsibilities and that you've been entrusted with by the government as the school district, can't you make a recommendation to government that perhaps this is something that should be altered or changed?
That's always possible, yes. I don't know, Terry, if you have anything to add to the to my commentary. Terry also wears the hat of looking after transportation within the district as well.
No, Tony, you've articulated it. I don't have anything to add at this time.
Okay. You good, Ms. Parsons?
For now.
Okay. Yep. Mr. Bragg? Go any route you want to go, yeah, until everybody's happy with where they are.
All right, well, I guess someone has to clue up at some time, so I'm going to clue up with, this will be, I think, my final question of the afternoon. If we look at the recommendations that came forward to the AG and you guys give us some indication that work was being done, I, for one, as a member of Public Council, would love to see a written report from you fellows, like where you stand today. And where you're to, what's been implemented, what's been done. And I understand your challenge of getting everybody into a system, but so that everything can be reported accurately and correct. And I get that. I spent 29 years in a small town in which I was the administrator, and a lot of people put a lot of faith in you or in me with their tax money and trusted me to spend it wisely and not to basically take it and run down the road and spend it in the slots or something like that. So I would think no matter what process we bring in, I mean, somewhere along the line, we have to have checks and balances where everybody is accountable, that works for every branch of government that deals with any pot of money at all. And to see anyone, and you can say, you know, if you steal a pen, it's petty theft. I did a course in 8 years ago, petty theft, envelopes and pens, and there's hundreds of thousands of dollars a year go out the window. But one is blatant, that is like tires and sodding and kitchen cabinets and God knows whatever else you could dream of. I know for you guys it has to be disturbing to be a part of something like that. And I sort of, I guess I'm apologizing for some of our line of questions, but you had to realize we sort of had to come out to this to the benefit of the people, the taxpayers of this province, and saying, you know, right now, they're going down the right road. And even if that means at some point someone ends up with those 8,000 invoices, got to approve them all, which may be an extreme measure, but something has to be done. And I need some confidence something is being done besides just replacing people, because I lived in a town with 300 people, and my best friend ran a town with 30,000. We said it's the same percentage of people in both towns. You have more in numbers, but you had the percentages. So no matter, and someone said it correct a while ago, no matter what checks and balance you put in place, to prevent 100% of any corruption is going to be really hard to do. It's only that person, them, themselves, that can permit that, right? So you can put in all the checks. If someone wants to do something that undermines everything, you know, they're going to find a way. There's no doubt about that. But we need to know somewhere along the line that you guys are doing something to give to put the feet back into the people of the province, that we don't rent a wheelbarrow a week for $700, and we don't rent tree extension cords or a jackhammer for an outrageous amount of money. Like, that, it happened, and nobody would ever want to see it happen again, and hopefully the people who had any part of that would be out the door by now with any luck at all, and anybody who knew anything about it would be out the door. Because you're right about the culture. We need to change it. We definitely need to change the culture of, and you talk about the kids. Every dollar we spent, or that we misspent there, is an opportunity that we didn't have a teacher's aid. And I struggle with that in my district because there's some schools that could really use our student aids. So any dollar that I've just two tires and it's $500 that's gone, well, that's a salary a week for some student aid somewhere. So that's not lost on anybody. And I would certainly hope that, like, this is a major learning curve and that, and as MHA Roger said, like, sort of show us what you've done. And I guess that's what I would leave you with today. You show us that you're doing something, and I'm sure we'll have probably a follow-up meeting in the days or months to come to see where it's too, because this is too big an issue for us just to let lie. And just hope that someone is doing something. We need to know something is being done. And thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you guys for coming up today, by the way.
Thanks, Mr. Bragg. Yep. Mr. Barry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, too, just want to, I guess, finally, just a wrap-up of sorts. Probably not a question, but just a couple of things I'd like to finish up with. And I guess, firstly, I'd like to go back to Mr. Price's remarks after my last round of questioning. And I want to remind them and let them know, and I do understand the volunteer role. I get that, and I appreciate what you and all trustees, I don't know, trustee from my own district is sitting over there, so I get that. But as MHA Reid said, this is not easy for us either. We know the principals. I talk to a lot of the staff over there on a regular basis with stuff in my district, but we have a responsibility, and we strongly feel, I think you all do too, as well as the AG, this is a very serious issue for public monies. And you know, colleagues have mentioned about school busing and what have you, and I have in my district, and I won't bore Terry Hall with any more of my rants on school busing, and I've very well publicly stated my views on it, so I won't go bring you into that. But, you know, I know the day that we were briefed on this, just to put in context of how it affects all of us, the day that the AG briefed us on this, we had a private member's resolution in this house on school busing. And I was irritated, and the chair probably could assure me on that or back me up. I was irritated by the amount of money that went missing, just by the virtue of this money went missing. And I've been fighting since I got elected for more school busing, to get a parking lot paved in one of the schools. And what have you. And it's just to bring, I mean, it angered me, but I know it angers everyone. I just want to, like, we're all real, we're all human, we're all in this together. But we, like, you know, we have a role, it's public money, we're put on these, we're appointed to this public accounts committee to ask tough questions, and I know the answer's not always easy either. And, you know, I just hope that when we're all said and done, we will be better going forward. I look forward to seeing some good recommendations that this never happens again. I know it's not 100% assurances, but I just want to thank you for coming in here, for answering the questions to the best of your ability, and I do look forward to seeing continued improvements, and once again, just thank you very much. Thanks.
Mr. Patton, Mr. King.
Certainly, I want to thank the English School District and the board members for being here today, and the AG and her staff. Like I say, it is our job as members of the Public Accounts Committee to make sure all the dollars are spent properly, and we've touched over that a little bit. That's why we want to ask the tough questions, to follow up and certainly make sure the money is being used properly. And there, as you talked about, I don't think there's a more important department in education, because it deals with our young people. So I look forward to working with you people in the near future as you roll out and implement a lot of the recommendations. Look forward for updates. And again, thank you for your time and being here today.
Mr. King, Ms. Rogers.
Okay, yes, I just have a few quick questions. The Education Task Force had called for more teaching and learning staff for students with special needs. And government announced a new category that the teaching and learning assistance would be added this fall. But at the same time, the regular teaching assistant hours were short of what was needed, and that was determined by the board itself, that 4,000 hours were needed. So, and then we also know that parents of children with autism or on the autism spectrum continually raise the need for more student assistance in the classroom. So, can you tell us what is the current allocation of hours for student assistance, and is there a plan to raise this in the next budget?
Well, so Tony Stack here. Thank you for the question. With respect to teaching and learning assistance, We're into phase one right now. They've been introduced. Phase one involves some 39 English school district locations and one French. My understanding is it'll be a similar number of schools in phase two, and we're working on identifying that right now. There has been an infusion of resources into those schools. When we go through our budgetary process, I know education will go before Treasury Board, and we will be there as a district, and we will be articulating for putting forth submissions for student assistance. Last year, there were $300,000 cut from the student assistance budget.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, you know, we will be arguing and putting forth a position that we would like, as a minimum, those restored. And with respect to the rest of the teacher allocation, a lot of it is by formula, and we do endeavor to ensure that there's addressing the need that's out there. There is a resource limitation, and then we have to divide up the resource as we see fit. It is encouraging, though, that there is an investment in education in terms of these phasing in of schools. That is an infusion of resources of reading specialists. We've already had the program specialists on a provincial level, but the reading specialists into schools, the learning resource teachers, and the teaching learning assistants. And those are, that allocation has, to my understanding, has been divorced from the normal allocations. These are in addition.
My grandson lives in Gambo, and he's going to be hitting kindergarten this coming September, and there were 28 kids born in Gambo when he was born. 26 of them are boys. So look out, kindergarten teacher. The autism community says there's a need to train student assistants in their specific issues, and such as anxiety and sensory issues. So are there plans for, and I'm hearing from a lot of parents with children on the autism spectrum, are there plans for training student assistants in specific needs for children with autism?
Some of our student assistants, student assistants are there sometimes for the physical needs, but there are also student assistants that are deployed, as you know, for behavioral needs and for autism supports. We also have autism itinerants in the system that support our instructional resource teacher who work with students with autism. So this is an ongoing piece. There's a lot of investment in professional learning for our regular classroom teachers as well, around supports for children with autism as well.
And the need is growing, huh? So the school district is represented on one of the task force committees studying absenteeism. Do we have any idea how many of our kids are not in school? And if so, who's not in school? Like, what kind of kids are not in school?
Yeah, I don't have data right now at my fingertips. But we are aware of the problem. In fact, I know the board chair took it as a personal initiative on behalf of the Board of Trustees, and I echoed that last year with a bit of a campaign around attendance. We have some chronic issues around attendance. We do know from the research that it starts in kindergarten, mm-hmm. and if we can get them early and keep them early, then that'll be mitigated over time. But it is a concern of ours. And I believe we are soon on the cusp of a release of some report from the Child Youth Advocate. I know we've been working with the Child Youth Advocate around the issue of attendance, and I know they'll be communicating a report in that regard in the very near future.
Oh, that's good. Okay. Two quick questions. Mental health, guidance counselors, overburdened. They can't see the kids and meet the needs of the kids that they have, which means that all they're doing is crisis work and intervention. The rise in anxiety and depression, they've been asking for a better ratio. Where's that in?
So we operate within the teacher allocation model. Mm-hmm. There is some degree of flexibility there, particularly because we're dealing with a dispersed population, and it doesn't make sense to apply the formula rigidly, because you might end up at a small school with, you know, a tenth of a guidance counselor. But Ed can give me the exact number, but I believe there's some 26. We're over-allocated in the area of guidance counselors by 26 units, is it?
Ed Walsh, it's closer to 30 for this current year. So while the allocation formula from the department is 1 to 500, when we factor in the extra units that we provide for the circumstances like Tony just referenced, it comes down to about 1 to 415, 1 to 420, or thereabouts.
Which really doesn't work out, though, in reality, when you're thinking about smaller schools and then guidance counselors traveling to a different school. And
correct. From an allocation perspective, yeah. The number was closer to 1 to 420, but that doesn't necessarily trickle down to individual schools.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm hearing from guidance counselors about the crisis that they feel is in our schools. And one last thing, Bishop Field.
Bishop Field, that is an ongoing transportation and works project to restore, renovate, mitigate the, essentially the ceilings all had to come down or being replaced. And there's been some building envelope work as well with that project. And we're still operating on the timelines of hoping to open that facility sometime during the next school year.
So not necessary.
Nothing definitive, and I don't have the exact time right now, but we'd have to get that from Transportation and Works.
Yeah, and is the work actually, I know that there was a contractor hired or the contract awarded. Has that work started?
I'd have to research exactly where that project is.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very, very much, and thank you for all your work, paid and unpaid, and for the dedication and the passion and the compassion, and good luck with this. And I think aside from very concrete solutions, to be able to repair the confidence in the English School District will be a task, and I hope that all of us in the roles that we play can be part of that in helping to do that and to help support you in the work that you have ahead of you, and that we're all pulling in the same direction to be the best damn school system we can give our children ever. And again, thank you so much, and please, if there's anything we ever can do as a committee, to let us know. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers. Mr. Reed?
Thank you. It's I could ask some further questions about other issues, but I think if we could probably be here all day. But I think I'll just conclude with a few comments. I think I just want to thank you all for coming, and thank you all for the work you do. I understand it's a difficult situation that has to be dealt with, and we've asked some difficult questions here today, I think, but we're all on the same page, I think, in terms of we want to see improvements made. We want to see the money allocated to education in this province put to the use that it was intended for, and we want the proper procedures in place. So I think we can all agree on that common ground, and we can work towards it from our various roles. As well, I just want to echo some of the comments of other members. The people who make up the school system in this province are very dedicated, hardworking people, and I think we need to recognize the work they do and recognize their professionalism. So I just want to make those comments in conclusion. Thank you to the members of the board as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reed. Ms. Parsons?
Yeah, again, thank you for being here today. And you know, obviously this is a process. I mean, we're all about transparency, especially in the Public Accounts Committee. And, you know, I commend there are a lot of good people who do a lot of good work. obviously in the Department of Education and all of our departments of the province. But I guess we can all agree as well that education is one of the most critical and one of the most important as we are overseeing, you know, and educating our youth. So I encourage you all, of course, you know, I guess going forward, you know, to keep these sorts of situations in mind. And, you know, it'll help everybody's confidence in the entire process and government overall. But again, thank you and for answering my questions as well.
Thank you, Ms. Parsons. And obviously, as chair, I get the last opportunity. The last time I spoke as the critic, I could speak for hours, but the last time I spoke on a piece of legislation, I went the whole hour. And that's for a number of reasons. One, that we all have, I think, a uniform concern for education and trying to improve it. I don't think there's any question in this House, no matter what side you sit on, nor particularly from the trustees who volunteer their time to put into it, or the staff who work for the school board, or any administrator, or any person who's part of our school system here, that they don't have as their forefront issue about improving the education system and making it the best it can be. Obviously, my mother used to say, locks are for honest people. And I never really understood until I questioned her one day on that about, no matter what you do in life, there's going to be people who are going to be dishonest and take advantage of situations. So I sort of challenged her on that, and she said, but you've also got to think, you've got to pick the neighborhood that you live in so you can ensure that. And I think that equates here that you guys have got to find a system that ensures the most probable opportunity that all of our money is going to be spent in the best avenues possible. So, and that's a philosophy that I've started to live by since I got in politics, particularly, knowing that things are not as simple as they sound. And the solutions are there, but there might be a timely fashion or a decision-making process about the equity for it, the investment, and the process going to be used. Again, as critic, I could talk about 100 things. My colleagues have brought up a multitude of things beyond, you know, the intent of this hearing. I would like to note one particular issue here, and it's, you know, relevant to another particular challenge that we have in our school system, working with special needs children, particularly deaf and hard of hearing. And I know there's a number of agencies out there, but particularly some who are trying to partner. And I do appreciate and respect wholeheartedly that there are policies and procedures and mechanisms that have to be met. But I do encourage, and I think we all do this, that you find ways that are equitable and workable to include these groups, because they have an expertise. And as, you know, Tony had mentioned, you're limited on your finances, and you try to get the best out of that. If it's changing the busing system to get the best for the quotas or the resources in the school system, and we all appreciate that. So I do ask that, you know, there's an open mind and being able to make things work the best that you can, because there are people out there offering to do the same thing that you guys have committed to do, and we have as elected officials, improve our system here for the people in Newfoundland and Labrador, or particularly our young people in our school system. So I want to, you know, thank the committee. I want to thank the chair and the CEO and the trustees who attended, and all the staff and representatives from the department. It was good to see that opportunity for them to get here. Before I conclude my comments, I'm going to turn it over to the chair, and then I'll have a few last comments to wrap it up.
Okay. I just wanted to make a comment at the end, and obviously I'm fairly passionate about what I do. I'd be crazy if I wasn't after so many years of being involved. This process is good for us. The AG process was good for us because it gives any time you shed light on an organization the size that we are, and when people ask questions that you don't control the questions, it's a cause for us to have to be accountable to what we do. Don't think the trustees don't have expectations either. Obviously, we have expectations over our organization, and it is looked on very critically to make this happen. Obviously, we were horrified with the details of some of these, and there are certain things in there there's no explanation for other than there's just no explanation for it. Our thing is we've got to make sure it doesn't happen again. Really appreciate the opportunity to come and speak today. Appreciate the staff for doing the work that they do in preparing for this, because this does mean they're doing this every day. I'm always amazed because every day is not a normal day. Could be busing today, could be a school in Black Tickle tomorrow, could be anything, but they still do it with the same amount of passion on a day. So that's greatly appreciated. Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Granway. And I want to particularly thank the Auditor General and her staff. We've met a number of times, particularly around this issue, and she knows as my colleague Barry had noted that, you know, we were very passionate because it came right in the midst of some debate around challenges within the school system and priorities. And again, as I said at the beginning of this, this wasn't about throwing anybody under the bus or pointing fingers. This was about all of us finding the best solutions so that we're confident we're getting the best return on the monies we're investing. So I'm going to ask Julie if you'd like to, a few comments about your assessment, where we are.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think in thinking in the conclusion side, we all recognize that this report certainly contained a lot of significant deficiencies. But I'm really pleased to hear today, again, as I said earlier, the discussion and recognition of, you know, a cultural change that needs to happen and a commitment to that change to happen, you know, which includes setting those clear expectations for ethical organizational behavior, because I think that is so key in an organization, you know, because everybody has that responsibility. It's not just the board. It's not just senior management. It's every employee in an organization. And I think if those expectations are set clearly and there's processes to allow employees to understand and train in that and have mechanisms to come forward for allegations, and the allegations are dealt with on a timely basis, I think we're all better off as organizations is very key. Very pleased, again, to hear a lot of the initiatives that are underway. I know there's a lot of hard work that has to go into those, so certainly recommend that there's a continued focus on that moving forward. Do also want to take the opportunity to thank the staff of the school district, because I know, you know, we were there for quite some time and they were very helpful and received a lot of cooperation from them while we were there. So I thank them for that as well. And again, lastly, I want to thank the Public Accounts Committee and commend you for having the hearing today. I think it's really good when you can respond in a very timely way to a report of this nature. So I commend you for that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Julia. I will note sometimes, and we've had, you know, I've been the longest sitting member of the public accounts over my years in government, and we've had some confrontational ones right at the beginning. And they normally come when we hear the CEO or the chair or the deputy minister say, we disagree with the Auditor General's reports, we don't see it as a concern. So it was uplifting to know you were starting on the right point, that you do see this as a serious issue, that the Auditor General's work was very thorough and you understood the recommendations being made were something that you wanted to aspire to get to, particularly seeing it from both sides of your entity here, the staffing point and the volunteer Board of Trustees. So that sort of, I think, lowered our tension levels, and I can't speak for all the members of the committee, but we did have some, you know, frank discussions around the concerns we had around this and what would be the responses from the board and the Board of Trustees. So, you know, I think we're in a better place. I think there's a framework here that's moving forward, and there's some steps being done. You know, I will say it, I do have some concerns about timeframes, because this is time sensitive, because every dollar that potentially is not going in the right avenue in education is a concern for everybody in this room. So we will be pushing, no doubt, in our discussions and our report around getting concrete timeframes, the processes of who's going to handle it, how it's going to be, the checks and balances are going to be put in play after, and then the evaluation to see if it's being effective. And no doubt the Auditor General has that as her responsibility, and in this case, I think part of her vocation now to ensure that moves to the next level. So once again, I want to thank everybody for coming in. We look forward, you know, I suspect this is not the end of this, because, as you know, there's other entities going on as part of this process. As that unfolds, we may have more questions, we may have more inquiries, there may be another opportunity for us to sit. No doubt we will be meeting with officials from the department to outline, you know, what our concerns are, or particularly what our recommendations around how the board gets supported in moving forward in addressing this particular issue. I just want to end by, again, thanking everybody, asking that the information that's been requested, if you could share that through me as chair or through Elizabeth as the clerk's office here, that way we can distribute it to all members as we do our follow-up as part of that. We will, when we complete our report, the committee will decide whether or not we add this as just an appendix to our one that we table in-house, or this may be a separate one. The committee will decide how we want to handle this one. We will obviously let you guys have a look at that, you know, around the same time we're about to table it in the house, so you understand what it is we're recommending and the process to go forward. On that note, I do wish everybody a happy holiday and a safe and a prosperous new year. Before I leave, there's one piece of housekeeping. I need a motion to adopt the public accounts meeting minutes of December 4th. Mr. King, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, nay. Motion carried. Could I have a motion to adjourn? Motion done by Mr. Reed. We're in adjournment. Thank you again.
Thank you.